Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You are all producers of this show, so visit the new page on our website called You Produce. State a fact, pose a question, suggest a guest, a topic, or an entire series, or make a correction. See You Produce at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Well, as I said before the break, an environmental dilemma in Lower Manhattan, protecting the community versus protecting the workers. The federal EPA is telling the city to seal up the Deutsche Bank building again to protect the community from toxic chemicals inside. But the lack of ventilation may be exactly one of the reasons they didn't inspect the building well enough before the tragic fire there last month. And the investigation into how exactly that tragedy was allowed to happen continues to unfold, with many layers implicating both the public and the private sectors. Mayor Bloomberg spoke about this on Thursday, acknowledging the complexity.
Nobody's scapegoating anybody, and we have not pressed charges against any of these people. We've simply removed them from their positions, because I don't think that if they did what it seems they did, they should be able to continue to put people in jeopardy.
The three people removed from their positions were all brass of the fire department. Many questions remain about the private sector as well as other public sector entities. And WNYC's Bob Henley continues to try to get to the bottom of it all and joins us now. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Brian.
What's the story, first of all, with risks to the public in Lower Manhattan versus fire safety risks at the Deutsche Bank building?
I guess you have to go back to the way this demolition and deconstruction was originally conceived of. People need to understand that this 15-story gash that opened up into the Deutsche Bank happened when the South Tower collapsed and tore the face off of Deutsche Bank. And then at the speed of light, if you will, all of that World Trade Center dust and contamination went inside all of that building. And then subsequently for years, it was left while the insurer went back and forth with Deutsche Bank. Mold developed, of course, human remains. And it's just been a mess. And so there was a very careful protocol developed, a consensus protocol that involved the Department of Labor at the state level, the EPA at the federal level, local community people, the Department of Buildings, to come up with a protocol that would both decontaminate the building and deconstruct it simultaneously, which was in the interest of the people that wanted to redevelop the site. So normally you might just decontaminate it, but what they wanted to do to try to make their timeline, if you will, is do five stories decontamination, then follow five stories on top with demolition. The problem with that is it involves, in the demolition phase, using torches to burn steel, if you will, and then you have the complication of below this work, areas sealed off with plastic membranes, if you will, for the purpose of decontamination. Once the fire happened on August 18th, the negative pressure system, that is a system that's used for decontamination, which keeps the air inside the building and helps filter out the contaminants, that became a real problem, and investigators believe indeed may have contributed to the quixotic downdraft of the fire. In addition, there were things like plastic and plywood that were part of this decontamination effort that may have added to what they call the combustible load. In this mix are also issues of the lack of maintenance of basic fire safety protections like the standpipe, which was apparently disassembled, and the sprinkler system. So what we have here is a battle behind the scenes between to what degree, and this is really, putting a fine forensic point on it, was the decontamination, did it add to the inability to get control of the fire, and to what degree to the fact they had no site control, that there was smoking at the site by workers, and that the basic infrastructure like a standpipe wasn't functioning. They have to move forward now, which means coming up with a new protocol which takes all of this into account.
So when the fire took place, as you were saying, one of the possible reasons that it became so bad so quickly and killed firefighters was how sealed up the building was so as not to allow toxins to escape into the general public's air. And so after the fire in August, they started to leave some openings so that
they had no choice. What had happened was the fire, and fighting the fire, they had lost all of that decontamination effort to fight the fire. They'd broken out glass and done a number of things to with the primary task of, one, making sure there were no workers left in there, and two, to suppress the fire.
Right. But then the EPA came in, for people who missed it, late last week. It was Friday, going into Labor Day weekend, and they said, look, New York City, our job at federal EPA is to protect the public's health. You have to seal that up again so toxins don't get out of the building. Personally, I question how much risk to the general public there really is from things leaking out of the Deutsche Bank building at Ground Zero versus the potential danger to firefighters in another incident or to workers at the site. But that's what EPA said.
Well, I think also in this mix is the EPA's responsibility to protect worker health in the site, and there they might have more of a pressing case, which is that in the process of deconstructing it, you're going to be churning things up, and in demolishing it, you're going to be churning things up. So the occupational exposure that exists for somebody that day in, day out, God bless them, are going in there to do this
work.
Those
are the people who really incur the risk.
Right, and that, and the compartmentalization helps them as well. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, what they have to do is get suited up every day. Imagine this, go in there, inside this area that's sealed, do this work that's, you know, who knows how much it will shorten your lifespan, make your union wage, that more power to you, come back out, get decontaminated, and hopefully not smoke a cigarette. So that's what's going on there. And also there's a question, there is perhaps some middle ground which will be worked out this week. There are materials apparently that don't have the same flash point that could be used for decontamination protocols. The other thing to keep in mind here is that, in fairness to the residents around there, the fire department didn't even have a plan on how to deal with that building. So that has to be in the mix here, too. We can't just totally forget what happened there in terms of the standpipe and the sprinkler system and the lack of a plan by the and the lack of a visit by the fire department.
WNYC's Bob Henley with us as he continues to investigate what really happened at the Deutsche Bank building. We can take a few phone calls at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You were here to talk about this last week, and since that conversation, we learned about the sprinkler system, which is that the sprinklers were shut off or weren't even working at that building, which is a little bit hard to believe, considering it was, you know, a building at Ground Zero with all that horrible stuff still inside. Do we know how or why that was the case?
This is all going to be part of course, the ongoing criminal investigation. We also have the Attorney General Cuomo's office looking at the environmental aspects of it and the protocols. And also, I'm sure we have internal looks by the private sector and all these alphabet soup of agencies. But still, what hasn't emerged from the public hearings is a sense of accountability. I'm kind of surprised, for instance, and I'd like to know what the contract says about this between Bovis Lendlease and the LMDC, why it is that the fire department seems to be bearing the burden in the short term in terms of discipline, but I don't know why, for instance, the main contractor wasn't suspended pending the outcome of an investigation, because clearly they, along with the LMDC, were responsible for what went on there. There seems to be a double standard in New York City right now. If you're a big corporation, go ahead, attaboy, just keep doing it, because we are so dependent on you, we don't have any alternative. But if you're a public sector employee, watch out for it. Hire yourself a very good lawyer.
So the general contractor doing the deconstruction and demolition work at the site was Bovis Lendlease, and we talked about them some last week. Now
right.
You're looking more at another contractor, I guess a subcontractor.
John Galt.
John
right.
Galt. And so as Ayn Rand once asked, who is John Galt?
Well, John Galt is a company that kind of came out of the necessity, according to people who were following this, of not having anyone that would step forward supposedly to do the work. And it had elements of a company that was under investigation called Safeway that was tied to another company called Big Apple that at one point had a principal in it called Harold Greenberg, who went to jail twice for connections to the Gambino crime family and for alleged building kind of corruption issues. And so they got bounced out of doing school construction work in 2003. And indeed, the Department of Investigation, which is very important, it's a quasi-independent city agency, had their eye on them, which and John Galt Company, a couple of years later, as early as the summer of 2006, Galt had lost out on a demolition of a Bronx House of Detention job demolition because of issues DOI had. And so apparently, people within the Bloomberg administration, whether it be Commissioner Stark or Deputy Mayor Doctoroff, may have had some insights, according to the Times reporting, had information about what was going on. John Galt had been tagged by the community as being unqualified and subsequently were dismissed by Bovis Lendlease. And so the question remains, you know, now they have to pick another subcontractor. What is Bovis going to do differently now so that they don't come up with a contractor who, at least on the face of it, appeared to be not up to the task?
Let's take a phone call. Michael in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Michael. Michael, are you there? Michael, can you hear me? Okay, we'll try Michael again in a minute. How about Steve in Edison? Steve, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Brian.
Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Thanks. The city has very strict regulations concerning the amount of plain wood that you can put into a building. And they are such a product as fire-retardant plywood. It's used all the time in the industry. Were the temporary partitions that they were using made of that fire-retardant plywood, or was it just regular plywood that can burn easily?
Exactly. That's where they're going now, is migrating towards the use of what the caller described, which is a fire-retardant plywood. Also, ironically, it was mentioned to me that the plywood that was there before the fire was to some degree to answer the public's concern about the what, according to the community people, was a continual shower of debris. You may remember, ironically, Brian, that a large pipe, for instance, months ago fell from high up in the Deutsche Bank building and hit the little fire company next door in the roof. So this was an ongoing problem. So clearly this is going to be part of the middle ground that they conceive, where they balance the issues of firefighting and public health.
Steve, thank you for your call. Bill in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Listening to your program, really enjoy it. You know, though, I'm a construction manager. I've worked on projects for Port Authority and for other projects downtown, and it seems that this passing it off to a subcontractor is one aspect, but Bovis Lend-Lease, you know, in their contract has to present a safety plan. There's such basic things as having a fire watch there continuously. When you're doing welding, when sparks fly, standard protocol is you have a fire watch on the floor below, just for that purpose, so that sparks don't come down. And the standpipe should have been watched. I mean, this is clearly not just a subcontractor. This is something that goes back to Bovis Lend-Lease. Yeah, I'm sure there's blame all around, but they're the ones that took the contract. And, you know, they're the ones that are ultimately responsible and kind of passing the buck. And surely the fire department should have been there somehow. But but clearly it's a Bovis Lend-Lease that has the major responsibility here.
Do you think, Bill, as a construction manager, that it would typically be in the contract that a company like Bovis Lend-Lease would be responsible for making sure that the standpipes work and are connected and that the sprinkler system is connected?
Absolutely. It's a standard boilerplate contract language on fire safety during construction. Bovis has it in their contract. They can't slip it by the subcontractor. They are ultimately responsible. And they have to have someone there 24/7. If there's any welding going on, for instance, after you finish the welding, even after it's done, you need to have someone there for a number of hours just for that purpose, to make sure no sparks and a fire catches on. I mean, clearly they're the key people here. And the other thing is that this idea that they couldn't get another contractor, it could be true, because I work downtown, and that LMDC is just a ministerial agency. I don't know what they do, but there's so many people involved in this. I think it just scared away a lot of people.
Bill, thank you very much for your call. I really appreciate your insight. LMDC, Bob, it's alphabet soup. Many people do. Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, which was established by the mayor, but primarily by Governor Pataki after 9/11 to oversee redevelopment of the area, correct?
Correct. And also, there is some investigation going on. The Times had a really good story last week that has to do with, apparently, a Boston firm that was interested in this work got a call like, don't come into New York if you know it's good for you, that kind of call. And apparently the FBI was looking into that. So that hasn't been run to ground fully. The Lower Manhattan Development Corporation.
Is that at the union level or the corporate level?
I wouldn't say union, whatever. Somebody called. Who knows?
Right.
But bottom line being that there was some kind of barrier to entry. I mean, What you have to also look at here is that the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation was about this independent authority business we've really had a problem with. In some ways, it acts as a buffer for the mayor and the governor, particularly the governor, and is a way of them kind of having an arm's-length relationship for accountability purposes. And I think that also adds to the level of confusion here. I mean, one of the things that apparently the Department of Investigation was on the stick here, did a good job, had the 411 on this company, and yet that information that was effective for the city to make the right choices didn't connect or wasn't real to the LMDC. This is all coming back to that whole situational awareness thing. At what point, 6 years out of 9/11, are we going to have the right hand and left hand working together to deconstruct or build anything? That's the problem, that you have information, you have talented professionals making the right calls, but it's lost in the powers that be. This has gone on over and over again, and I think that systemic issue has to be examined.
Coming up in a few minutes, advice for brand new freshmen coming to college in New York City. We'll get some from an official of Barnard College, and we will take your advice. There may be college freshmen from God knows where in America and the world just arriving, listening in New York City, looking for the public radio station, listening to us right now, who need advice on how to navigate New York as they start their careers as college freshmen. We'll take your advice coming up in just a couple of minutes when we finish with WNYC's Bob Henley, who's investigating the Deutsche Bank fire. Bob, I understand there will be a community meeting tomorrow with the mayor's communications director, Ed Schuyler.
No, he's actually deputy mayor, and he's moved on to deal with things like the emergency response question. And he did a pretty amazing job last time he was before the Lower Manhattan Group in terms of giving them a sense that they were going to do something proactive. The biggest problem for the Lower Manhattan residents was that they didn't have information they need to make critical decisions the day of the fire, which they had predicted to their credit for years might be a problem. And so they didn't know when the fire was happening. Should they turn off their air conditioning? Should they seek shelter? There was just no information coming from the city. And so he had promised, Schuyler did, that he would come back with something in a way of a workaround situation, whether it be a reverse 911, for instance, where, like we have here in New Jersey, the fire department can identify a certain block, if you will, if we're faced with a certain threat where there'll be a flood, and call you and say, listen, Mr. Henley, we have information that you may need to take the following action. It may even be recorded. They want something like that in place. Schuyler's got to have something to come before them to show that they've done this work, because honestly, this community at this point is quite beleaguered, and I think in a sense of good faith, they don't want work to really start there again until this basic public protection's in place.
Mr. Henley, we have information that you should take the following action. Keep investigating this story.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for coming on WNYC's Bob Henley, and as I said, coming up in a minute, your advice for brand new freshmen arriving at one of New York City's many colleges this week. Stay tuned.